Paul, why is Latin percussion so present in your music?
Why is Latin percussion so present? Okay. I guess it's because I'm Latin. I'm Latino. I like Latin percussion. I kind of gravitate to it naturally, I guess. I hear it in my music, and I enjoy playing with it under me.
One of the pianists that you gravitate towards is Horace Silver. Why has he influenced your music so strongly over the years?
Well, Horace, is a triple threat. I mean, he's one of the great composers from the golden age of jazz, and he continues to be a great composer, very prolific. He's a very spiritual guy. He is an extraordinary pianist, blues pianist. I've admired his work ever since, the 50s, when I used to first begin actually seeing him in various groups, including his own. Just a great musician, great player, great blues player, and I admire his wit in his music, which is a rare quality that you get in music. You know, when he does compositions like Sister Sadie or Filthy McNasty, I mean, come on, like, who comes up with these things, Horace comes up with them. He's a very witty guy, and his music is very witty and firmly rooted in the blues tradition, the piano blues tradition.
Why did you choose Nardis for the new record, which is called Excursions?
Well, first of all, I'm a great Miles fanatic. He's one of my idols. And even though I am a pianist, but Miles, this Nardis is actually from his early period of composing. And I gravitated towards it because it has a Spanish flavor, kind of a Latino flavor, at least to my ears. Why do I say that? If you listen to the melody closely, it's crafted in a very kind of sinuous, chromatic way. Da-da-dee-da-da-da-da-da-dee-da. It has a very kind of sliding kind of insinuation about it, the melody. And it's also suggests very strongly Spanish harmonic music. And we know Miles did sketches of Spain, so he did like that kind of sound. So I also like it, and that just seemed like a natural pick for me to get something like that. But I wanted to see what I could do with it, how I could recast it for myself, for piano, and as it turned out, for percussion.
Paul, why did you title the new record Excursions?
Well, excursions, one of the things it suggested means is trips of explorations, going someplace and taking a good look where you haven't been before, perhaps. The tunes on this CD, which are all original except for Nardis, but these were all tunes which I composed and trying to experiment with different ideas, just taking the listener to new places, taking the listener hopefully to on an excursion to different sound areas or different rhythmic areas where maybe they hadn't paused and taken a good look before. It's like Nardis, recasting Nardis and saying, okay, let's take a look at this. Let's take an excursion here and see what we can find. And the other tunes as well.
Was the energetic Grand Central Bossa based on a jazz standard? Because I hear chords, familiar chords in that tune.
Well, I guess the familiar chords there are from Bossa style. It was written, actually, the reason I call it Grand Central Bossa is we did it last summer for a performance we did sponsored by Grand Central Station in New York in a park there. And I guess it's just, you could say it's cast in a kind of traditional bossa nova style or up-tempo bossa style. Not terribly unfamiliar in its structure, but, you know, that tradition.
How did your stay with Vinicius de Moraes, the legendary bossa nova wordsmith, influence your development as a pianist and composer?
Yeah, well, that's one of those experiences. Oh, first of all, for your listeners, if they, you know, who's Vinicius de Moraes, in case they don't know, Vinicius de Moraes, who passed away recently, was a great Brazilian poet and also wordsmith. He wrote the lyrics to many of the classic bossa novas that we all know and love, like The Girl from Ipanema and so on. But I was fortunate enough on one of my trips to Brazil, I've been there a few times, I was taken to his home and introduced to him, and I was a fan of his music and the music he had created with the great Baden Powell, the great Brazilian guitarist composer. So I was thrilled when a musician friend of mine in Brazil said, "I'll take you to his home." So I went to his home, and he was very, very gracious and cordial because he had been a diplomat here in the U.S. He'd been the Brazilian diplomat after World War II. How did that affect my music? Well, you know, it's one of those experiences that it was a breakthrough. He was a man that I admired greatly, his work with Tom Jobim and others. And meeting him was kind of like a transforming experience. It was it changes you in the sense that, wow, you know, as I can only say, it's a breakthrough. Like, it gave me renewed energy after that meeting, to meet someone of his stature and his accomplishment. And it gave me a lot when I left his home to go out with.
Was the tune Blues in Rio perhaps inspired by that meeting and visit?
Well, I think Blues in Rio is inspired by perhaps all my visits to Rio, not any one in particular.
What was the most difficult tune to record on the disc?
Oh, okay, let's see. Well, actually, in the session, I guess the one that was the most elusive to get down was Assim É. In English, that means "that's how it is." Assim É is Portuguese because it's part of the three-tune Brazilian suite, which I have on the CD. So Assim É, or "that's how it is," was kind of elusive, just trying to get it right. It's a very up-tempo bossa or samba, and the reason I call it "That's How It Is" is because as we were, well, first as we rehearsed it, and then when we got into the studio, you know, first take didn't work quite, and we said, "No, that's not how it is," and then finally when we got it going and cooking, it was like, "Oh, yeah, that's how it is." So I was trying to think of a title, and I said, "Yeah, okay, that makes a good title. That's how it is," but since it's Brazilian, I also call it Assim É, which means the same thing. I think we nailed it, though.
Sounds like you did. Sounds like you did. Paul, who joins you on the new record? Do you have any? You mentioned you do have a new bandmate on this record.
Yes, I do. Dave Delgandio, who's playing drums on this session. On these sessions, and the other musicians are the same that were with me on the last CD, Origami. Dave, I met in New York. I think it was one of those degrees of separation meetings, because he'd lived in Brazil for quite some time, for a year or so, and he was referred to me by a mutual friend, and I had in mind to do some of this, these Brazilian compositions which I'd written, so he was kind of like, I feel like he was kind of like sent to me. He had the sensibility and the, he dug right in on these tunes, and you know, knew how to, exactly how to do them. He also has an interesting background. He toured with Ringling Brothers for a year or two, playing for them in the orchestra in the band. So, pretty diverse guy as far as his talents are concerned.
And it looks like you have the players from the most recent record on board, Reggie Pittman, Henry Morales, Bryce Sebastian.
That's right, uh-huh.
Why did you use electric piano on the tune Afro Chant? It's very gorgeous and adds to the spellbinding nature of the piece.
Oh, okay, thank you. Well, I guess that's why I used it, Chris, so it would be gorgeous and spellbinding. And I guess I succeeded. It seemed like it would be more gorgeous and spellbinding if I did it on the electric rather than the acoustic. I tried it on the acoustic, and it didn't click in somehow. And when I tried it on the electric, I said, yeah, okay, that's it.
All right. Could you describe how a downtown New York edge is part of your music?
Well, I guess I the reason that would describe it is because I think downtown music takes risks, is willing to take more risks than otherwise. For a lot of people, probably wonder what's a downtown edge in New York. But downtown is where most of the music clubs are located that are the busiest and the most active and the most venturesome. They've always been in Lower Manhattan, and I kind of all my work, creative work, has been in that area of the city over the years. So I guess I kind of cultivated this kind of attitude, downtown attitude. When I brought out my first CD a few years ago called Nexus, that was when, you know, it was really identified as a downtown kind of record. It was very alternative. The lyrics were kind of dark. I took a lot of risks in it with the music. And so I guess downtown edge means you don't play it so safe. My label is Graffiti Productions, and I describe it as urban jazz, not by the rules. So I guess that's about the best way I can say it.
Could you describe the music that you created for the Off-Off-Broadway theater movement a couple decades ago?
Sure. Well, that I honed a lot of my arranging skills and composing skills during that period because during the 60s, early 70s, getting back to downtown Manhattan again, that was during the explosion of pop art and the arts at that time, the Warhol movement and the pop art movement. And a lot of the people connected with that movement were writing plays and doing acts, and they wanted music, and I knew a lot of those people, so they just began asking me to compose music, to get bands together, and so forth for them. Some of the people in Lou Reed's Walk on the Wild Side, for example, were all doing acts and writing plays at that time, and so I collaborated with some of those folks. And I was very fortunate because it gave me the opportunity to write what I wanted. Nobody was really dictating. And and I wrote what I wanted and was able to contract the musicians, the bands, and play the music and have it performed. And it was a great training ground for me, that particular moment in my career.
Getting back to the new record now, on the tune, The Marrying Kind, did you intend to have a sentimental edge put into that composition, The Marrying Kind?
I thought you were going to ask me, did I intend to find a wife when I wrote that tune? well, actually, that was written for one of those performance pieces during that period of the early 70s. and it was a tune written for a show at that time, and it's a jazz ballad, and it was kind of sentimental. It has a lyric which is not done on this particular release, but the art of the jazz ballad is a great tradition in our music, and nailing the emotions and nailing the attitude in a jazz ballad can be one of the most elusive, difficult things. I love jazz ballads myself. You know, the slow tempos, the expression, the rubatos, all that stuff. You really have to work hard, I think, sometimes to just get it right. So I wanted to do a jazz ballad. And so that was in my book for many years, and I pulled it out, and, well, I hope we nailed it. But I guess you could call it sentimental, if jazz ballads are sentimental, and I guess they are.
Paul, your piano training began right here in Omaha as a very young child, correct?
Oh, that's right. Yes.
You had piano lessons, and then you were part of the band in your high school, I believe? Or?
Yeah, and I was on a couple of talent radio shows here. This is going like way back. when I was in, a teenager, I did some TV appearances, one or two, when I was in high school. So, yeah, I started to get my performance experience here on radio and TV in Omaha back in the late 50s.
How has Herbie Hancock been an influence on you as a composer?
Well, this man is, an incredible composer, writer. I mean, you just listen to his compositions, and they're so beautifully crafted and composed, so the performance of them. The Herbie Hancock songbook is just irresistible, I think, to any pianist. And if you're a composer, I mean, just look at the way that he does things, and his ideas for melodies and harmonies, are absolutely, unique and beautiful. So, I've listened to those Herbie records a lot during my formative years, and I'm very happy to say he was one of those breakthrough experiences that I spoke of earlier for me as a composer and a pianist.
Why is your favorite muse New York City?
Well, I guess because that's where I do all my work today, and I love New York. The energy of it just is irresistible, and it sets you off. It certainly sets me off. It's a very, extremely multicultural city, 50% immigrants, languages of all kinds, 150 languages spoken, which you probably hear every day when you're walking down the street. It's exciting, a lot of energy. And it just gives me a lot of energy and ideas for my own work and for my own music. So, yeah, I guess I have to say it's my muse. It's a source of great inspiration to me. That's why I call the one tune Grand Central Bossa. But whether I label them that specifically or not, generally I have found that people will say to me, "Oh, your music is so New York." So I never really thought about it too much at first, but I kept getting that response from people from all over the country. So I guess it is. I don't know what you think or what your listeners may think.
Well, I'm sure they'll enjoy the record when it comes along.
If they want to contact me, I do have a website, paulserrato.com, and, of course, cdbaby.com is where you can, get a lot of these things.